This morning, I'm going to ask a couple questions here, and going to need you to raise your hand. How many of you consider yourself young? How many of you consider yourself old? It is a trick question, for some of us, probably more than others, it all depends on who you ask. Keyshawn probably thinks I'm old. And then there's other people here that say I'm still young. And so as we think about where we're, you know, to some people we're old, to some people we're young, you'll see how that ties in as we go along. We're going to start out this morning in Amos chapter 2. And then we'll end up in 1 Timothy. Just a couple verses here in Amos, Amos 2, verse 6 to verse 12. The first part of the book of Amos, the first chapter and a half, is Amos telling the children of Israel all the judgments that God is going to bring onto different groups of people. And the one commentator was like, you know, there was probably a lot of amens from the crowd as he was talking and saying how God's going to judge these people that are enemies of Israel and these people. And he comes around and he slowly starts getting closer and closer to home. And things start quieting down until he says in verse 6 that these three things and four that I'm going to judge you for. We'll read chapter 2, verse 6 through 12 at this time. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Israel and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof. Because they sold the righteous for silver and the poor for a pair of shoes, that pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor, and turn aside the way of the meek. And a man and his father will go in unto the same maid to profane his holy name. And they lay themselves down upon the clothes laid to the pledge by every altar, and they drink the wine of the condemned in the house of their God. Yet destroyed I the Amorite before them, whose height was like the height of the cedars, and he was strong as the oaks. Yet I destroyed his fruit from above and his roots from beneath. Also I brought you up from the land of Egypt and led you 40 years through the wilderness to possess the land of the Amorite. And I raised up of your sons for prophets and of your young men for Nazarites. Is it not even thus, O ye children of Israel, saith the Lord? For ye gave the Nazarites wine to drink, and commanded the prophets, saying, prophesy not. The rest of the chapter goes on to describe the punishment that God's going to bring for them. But verse 12 was the one that made me go back and read the following verses again. A couple weeks ago, because it grabbed my attention that what were they doing here? Why did they want the prophets to stop prophesying? What was their motives here? Just a quick list of the sins that they were being judged for. The first one was the fact that bribery worked in their system. Justice was denied to the poor and the oppressed. As long as you gave enough money, you got what you wanted. It didn't matter what was right or wrong. The second one was sexual sins, like the heathen around them, were very prevalent. Number three was they took clothes for a pledge from the poor people. And they didn't even need the clothes. They used it for basically rugs around their idol sacrifices, the altars there. And God had clearly said that if a man was so poor that he had to give his clothes for a pledge, that you weren't allowed to take that. So they were going against direct commandments there. And then in verse 9, God takes a little break from and starts reminding them of all the things that he did for them. That even though I destroyed the Amorites who were big and strong, even though I brought you out of Egypt, led you through the wilderness, provided for them for 40 years, he gave them the law to live by. Furthermore, he raised up prophets and Nazarites, priests, to lead them spiritually. So not only did he provide for them physically, but also spiritually while they were going through the wilderness. And I like how he says, is not this true? There at the end of verse 11. And then verse 12, the last thing that he was confronting, which is kind of our key verse this morning, says, but ye gave the Nazarites wine to drink and commanded the prophets, saying, prophesy not. So the question is, how do I do the same thing to people, to young people around us? And what does it mean? What did it mean then? How did it affect them, or how did it affect the children of Israel? And one of the things that the Nazarites weren't supposed to do was they weren't supposed to drink wine or almost even touch a grape. They had pretty strict rules on that. And there was some other cleansing that they had to do. And the prophets not prophesying, that's obviously what a prophet does, is prophesy. And so by telling them not to, it was causing them not to be able to fulfill what God had for their life. And the Nazarite, it was telling them, we get the impression that these, he's talking to the fact that he's raising up young people for these positions. And they're telling him, it doesn't matter that God says don't drink wine anyway. It doesn't matter that God says you're supposed to prophesy, you're supposed to say what I share with you. Just be quiet. We want to keep living the way we are. And so it makes their life useless, and they're unable to fulfill God's call on their life. And then I had to think of some other passages in later on in the Bible that talk about youth and some of the things that Paul talked to Timothy. So the title, if you want one, is Let No Man Despise Thy Youth. And God is still calling people, young and old, to serve him. In Acts 2, verse 17 and 18, breaking in the middle here, it says, and on my servants and on my handmaids I will pour out in those days of my spirit, and they shall prophesy, and I will show wonders in heaven above and signs in earth beneath. I'm sorry, I started the wrong verse. Verse 17, and it shall come to pass in the last days, saith the Lord, that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. And on my servants and on my handmaids I will pour out in those days my spirit, and they shall prophesy. So it's not just limited to one group of people. It is everyone has a job to do. Everyone has a spot to serve. Just recently someone here mentioned that we sometimes have heard the saying that the children and the youth are the church of tomorrow, and how that is not a true statement. The one commentator that I was reading said that's actually a lie from Satan. It's not just untrue, it's actually a lie, because just like in the first there in Amos, if the young people, the people with zeal and energy, whether you're 20 or 40, if those people are silenced and squashed down, then there's going to be less work for him to do, because they aren't out attacking and moving forward. A saying that I've come across from time to time is that a good leader is always training someone else to take his job, or at least part of his job. And so I think it's important to for leaders to allow space for young people or other people to exercise their gifts. And then on the other hand, you also have to be willing to exercise those gifts when somebody says, hey, I think you could do this, and be willing to be used in that way. In Matthew 18, verse 6, it talks about the seriousness of offending a young one. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Offend there, to cause to stumble or to sin, to discourage, that there's probably different levels of that. But as we think of people coming on and exercising their gifts, we can either encourage that, or we can really hamper that. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, 1 Timothy 4, 12 to 16, it says, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given to thee by prophecy, with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Meditate upon these things. Give thyself wholly to them, that thy profiting may appear to all. Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this, thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. The first part of the chapter here, I thought it was interesting. The first part of the chapter here described some of the error that was coming into the church, and some of the Judaizers that were attacking the Christians. And Then he turns to Timothy and tells him how to respond to that. And when we think of disrespect, despising, looking down on, disrespecting, discrediting what they have to say, you know, we all, to some level, want to be respected by the people around us, want to be respected for what we do. And yet, there's proper ways of handling this. Paul gave Timothy the tools and ways to approach this, to overcome that. We are to be an example, a pattern of the believer. And people can tell. We were just in Mexico, and you walk out on the street, and you look different. And even if you go out and you go for a bike ride and you spend some time in the sun down there, you're still going to look different, because you're going to be red instead of the color they are. They're used to that environment. And so the people around us can tell our motives, tell why we're doing the things we're doing. So how do we keep someone else from despising us? Paul said to Timothy, "Let no man despise thy youth." It could kind of come across in two different ways, don't let someone else discredit you just because you're a young person, just because you're younger than they are or whatever. But to actively live out the gospel in your life. He didn't tell them to tell Paul didn't tell Timothy to get in their face about, hey, you can't do this to me. He told them to live it out, not to just blatantly go against maybe what they're trying to say, but to continue living out by daily life, live so that no one can reasonably despise your youth. And I thought that was kind of goes along with the idea of live peaceably with all as much as lieth in you. We hear that phrase sometimes. So there might be somebody that still despises you because of your age, despises you because of what you're doing, but they don't have a reason to. Don't give them a reason to. When we disrespect someone who is serving God with zeal and energy, we're actually hindering the work of God from going forward. And this is where sometimes we catch ourselves on both sides. Where we're one time we're the older person, the next time we're the younger person. But we all have, and maybe it's not an age thing that is the issue, but when we're hindering or discouraging somebody from serving God and being used the way God has them, it's hindering God's work from going out, and that's not a good position to be in. I listened to a book on the way down and while we were in Mexico that was really good, and I would recommend. It's called Now I Am Known by Peter. I'm not sure how I practice pronouncing his last name, but it's a difficult one. It's a good read. It's an easy read, and yet it has some powerful things. His dad. Just to illustrate the power of words, his dad told him as a young boy that he was worth less than the dogs that roamed in the street that nobody took care of, that nobody fed. It's a pretty intense story and how he overcame that and how he took revenge on his dad at one point and then was convicted that this isn't right. I'm doing the same thing, and gave that to God. It's an easy story to listen to. But as I was thinking about the power of words, how do we disrespect somebody? It can be by our actions, but often it's by words we say. It can be just little comments we make or whatever. I had to think about a story. I don't think I told this here at church before, but I was probably about 9 or 10. We were helping somebody from church move, and there was a bunch of people there, and we were carrying stuff out to the truck. And there was this, I have no idea how old he would have been at the time, probably mid-30s. So to me, he was an older guy. But we were carrying stuff out, and we were having fun. We were running back and forth, and the one time he was just kind of standing there at the back of the truck. I don't remember if he was carrying anything out or not, but he was like, "Where can we stick these two guys?" And he grabbed my brother and I kind of by the back of the neck, like, "Where can we stick these two guys out of the way?" And I'll probably never forget that, because it was an offhanded comment, maybe even a joke to him, but it was hurtful to me, because I was helping and I was enjoying it and having fun doing it. And this morning, as I was thinking about that story and the power of our words, I was convicted that there's times when I might not say that, but just my attitudes, the way I treat certain people, that can be very hurtful to them. And yeah, I don't want to be that way. And I just thought about, you know, if he would have, instead of making those comments, if he would have said, you know, hey, thank you guys, because we were running back in to get the next box. We're saving him steps. If he would have thanked us for what we did and appreciated what we were doing, even though we couldn't carry the heavy stuff, how that would have affected me differently. And it wasn't necessarily a scarring thing that happened in my childhood, but it's a story that I'll probably never forget. David was another example of someone who didn't allow others to discredit him because of his youth. One of the commentators referred to him as the lunch boy. He was bringing food to his brothers. And when he said he would go fight Goliath, his brothers accused him of being proud, of just wanting the attention, and that's why he was going to go do it. Saul really allowed him to go, but really doubted his abilities. And Goliath got furious that this little kid would come out to fight him. There was a little motto that my wife sent to me that said, "No one trashes your name more than someone who's afraid you will tell the truth," which that can get into a whole nother side of things, but sometimes the reason we treat people the way they do is because it's out of fear of either showing us up or showing what the truth really is. So I feel like I have experienced both sides of this, where I'm the younger and the older. I've experienced where someone encourages your dreams, encourages your vision of doing something. And even if they have to, you know, steer your zeal into a little better direction or whatever, give you some guidance there, you feel like you're on the same team. You're headed the same direction. You know, sometimes our ideas or our zeal can be pushed down and squashed, and it can be discouraging. But David, like David, we need to have our confidence in God and not in the people around us or what they're, how they're responding to it. So in closing, I have two more verses to read in Colossians 3. God doesn't care how old or young we are. And I thought it was interesting with the thrift store scenario that Gary shared. It's pretty open to anybody, and there's lots of opportunities like that. He's looking for people who are willing to serve be available. Colossians 3:23-24. "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ." So God is looking for willing people, and I found an interesting acronym. Said God is looking for fat people to serve him. Not lazy and fat, but faithful, available, and teachable. But I thought the fat probably helps us stick a little more in our minds, because we're not supposed to be fat, lazy Christians, but we're supposed to be faithful, available, and teachable. So let's pray. Thank you, God.